All right, we are in this effective communication class. We're looking at how we connect to God, how last time we looked at how you connect in your marriage. Remember, communication is all about connecting. And in this session, we're looking at how you connect with family. If you're married and you happen to have children, God has blessed you in that way. And it truly is a blessing. But how do you effectively communicate in the family? That's what we want to look at. So, basic communication path for your family. It's the same path as any relationship, your relationship to God, your relationship to your marriage. You have to have talking. You have to have listening. You have to do it repeatedly. Now, it used to be that families spent a lot of time together, that they worked together, they played together, they had every meal together. My wife grew up on a farm. There was the morning chores to do, then the whole family had breakfast. There was afternoon chores or late morning chores to do, and then they all had lunch together. And then there was other things to do when they had dinner together. They were together at periodic times all throughout the day. Now families today, kids are off to school, parents off to different places of work, kids are into the sports, into the hobbies, the different groups that they're a part of. The whole family's going every which way. A family is like if you took a rubber ball and each person is a rubber ball and you just randomly threw them in a room, they're bouncing all over the place. And once in a while, all the balls meet together in one place, but that's a rare thing. So how are you going to have a close family? And I've heard people tell me this. It's, Pastor, you don't understand. It's impossible in this world to have talking, listening repeatedly as a family. I can't get my family together. It's just impossible. And then I look at them and I say, well, then fine. Then it's impossible to have a close family. Because there's only one way to have a close family. Talking, listening repeatedly. If you don't have that, you're not going to have a close family. And you can blame your modern culture all you want. But that's not going to help you get a close family. If you want a close family, it takes talking, listening, repeatedly. And you have to somehow be together in order to do that. Well, if you want God at the center of your family, it takes communication with God together in your family. So prayer, Bible, devotions. You have to spend time in prayer and with God's Word together as a family. How are you going to do that? What you need to succeed. You need a path. What are you going to study? I had four boys, and at one time, all four were teenagers. We had four children within 5.5 years, so we had four teenagers in the house. We decided that we want our kids into the Word of God, so we decided we're going to read through the Bible. And I gave my kids an option. We can read through the New Testament in a year. We can read one chapter of the Bible every day through the year. Or we can read the entire Bible for the year. That's three chapters every single day. But I threw in some incentive. I said, if we do the one, it's $50. I'll give you $50 at the end of the year. The second one, second easiest, I'll give you $100. If we read through the whole Bible, I'll give you $150, which is $600 for all of them. Well, they chose the $150 route, read through the whole Bible. That's three chapters every single day. At 9 o'clock every night, we got out the Bibles and we read the Bible. And if we skip a day, now we have six chapters to do. If we skip 2 days, we have nine chapters to do. So you don't want to skip. We did it the entire year. We put a path together and we figured out how we're going to do it. We put it into a schedule, 9 o'clock at night. It didn't matter if they're friends. If their friends are over, well, they got to join us too. Accountability. We're holding each other accountable. You're not going to get the $150 unless we do this. Reward, the $150. Support. We didn't have support. Our family was just doing that on our own, so it became difficult. We could have quit when it became hard. Why most don't do? By the way, let me tell you what happened with that. It was, you know, sometimes we read the Bible and we have a little discussion. It was awesome. Sometimes we're just reading through the Bible because we're supposed to read through the Bible. Especially when we got to Chronicles. Chronicles is just one name after another. You're just reading names after names. I'm wondering, God, why are we doing this? How, you know, my kids are going to be in, you know, counseling one day, saying how their parents, you know, forced them to read all these names in the Book of Chronicles. It's interesting. And the reason why we wanted to do this, read through the whole Bible, is because I was inspired by my wife's parents. My wife's parents, as I said, were farmers. They had dinner, they had breakfast together, they had lunch together, they had dinner together, and they read one chapter of the Bible at every dinner time, every time they sat at the table to eat. So they read three chapters of the Bible every single day, 365 days of the year, which means they read through the whole Bible from cover to cover every single year, which was impressive. And when I was dating my wife, before I married her, we were reading the Bible. I was there, you know, every day, three times. And we happened to be in Chronicles. And my father-in-law is reading all these names, one after another. And the next, at lunch, same thing. Supper, same thing. Next day, same thing. And I'm like, ah. And so he kept reading. And anyway, one day he was reading, and he's reading all these names, and he read the name Hephzibah. I don't know if you know that name, but it's in the Bible. He read the name Hephzibah. And he paused, and he looked up at all of us, and he said, I've always liked that name. I remember thinking, okay. And then he kept reading. Never thought about it again. Hephzibah. All right. Now, it's many, many, many years later. We're reading through the Bible with our family, four boys. They're all teenagers. And we're reading, and we're in Chronicles. And we're reading all these names. And they're like, ah. And all of a sudden, I'm reading along, one name after another. And all of a sudden, I read the name Hephzibah. And I pause, and I look up at my kids, and I said, your grandfather always liked that name. And now they were looking at me like I was looking at my father-in-law so many years ago. So we kept reading. The next year, we read through the whole Bible. We succeeded at doing it. The next year, I said, well, what should we do this year? And they said, let's read through the whole Bible again. I said, good, because I'm not paying you this year. That was priming the pump. So we started reading the Bible again. Well, as we started reading, grandfather, my wife's father, died. Her mother died a couple months before, and then the father died like in January. So he died, and so now it's after he had died, the funeral and everything, and now it's a month later or a month and a half later, and we're in Chronicles again. Okay, we're just reading again, same old thing, pass out the Bibles, everyone's reading. And we're reading through these names. I'm thinking the same thing. Here we are again, reading through all these names. I'm not thinking anything. I'm wondering, how is this going to be good, Lord? How does this teach anybody anything? How is this inspired? How is this going to change anyone's lives here? We're just reading these names. And I'm reading along, and without thinking about it, without realizing it's coming, all of a sudden, I get to the word Hephzibah. And I read the word Hephzibah, and I look at my kids through tears in my eyes, because we all know what that word means now. We know that it stood for Grandpa, and how he walked with God every day, how he read the Bible three chapters every single day, how God was precious to him, and how he's not here with us now. The good, the sad, all of that was all packaged into that one word. A word that God had been working in us from the first time I heard him say he liked that name. I had no idea it had any meaning whatsoever, but God did. See, that's what the Word of God does. It may not hit you the first time, but God has a plan, and he's working out that plan. But you have to somehow do it. As a family, you have to lay that first layer. And then the second comes, and the third, and fourth, and finally at the fifth layer, it grabs your heart and squeezes it. Why most don't succeed? Too many schedules. Again, the bouncing balls in the family. Too busy. Everyone's doing their own thing. Mixed up priorities. We've got other things we want to do. There's a large age spread. You have older kids, you have younger kids. These understand one thing, these need something else. And well, how do you do that together as a family? Devotions are not meaningful. You're just going through the motions. Again, Hephzibah, does it mean anything? I don't know. It takes 18 years for something to maybe click in. Lack of support. Maybe you're not walking with God personally, or in your marriage, or you don't have it going on at church. It isn't supported. And so as a family, you're floundering. Maybe one of your kids is uncooperative, and now what do we do? And you don't have other families helping you and telling you that there is hope, even though your teenage son right now doesn't care. You just keep going. This is what you do. This is what we learn. In the end, he may come around. Lack of a mission. You know, if your family was actually helping other families walk with God, you see, that would inspire your own family to stick with it. But if you're not helping anyone, then why should you do it? How to build communication walls. Okay, you're in a family, you're trying to make communication happen, and we do things that build walls, that separate us from one another. How do you do that? Number one, the best way to kill communication in your family is to have a lot of yelling, raising your voice in anger. Colossians 3:21, fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged. Anger is an emotion that we use when we're frustrated about how things are going. We get frustrated with our kids. We do so many things for them and then this is what they do to us in return. How is this possible? It's unfair. Anger is always caused by this thought, this is unfair. Well, hello. A lot of life is unfair. It's unfair that you as a sinner are loved by God and that Jesus died on the cross for you. That's unfair too. We love because He first loved us. Nagging, criticizing, correcting and directing. Again, as a parent, the kids have a lot to learn. Everything that they do could be improved upon. And so parents spend a lot of time criticizing. No, that's not quite right. No, you didn't put your clothes on right. No, you didn't do the test right. You could have done this better, this right. You could have played your sport better. You could have, there's all these things that they could do better, and we're correcting and nagging and criticizing and correcting, and that's all they hear. Ephesians 6, verse 4. And now a word to you parents. Don't keep scolding and nagging your children, making them angry and resentful. Rather, bring them up with loving discipline the Lord Himself approves, with suggestions of godly advice. Number 3, prying. If you love someone, you will be loyal to him no matter what the cost. You'll always believe in him, always expect the best of him, and always stand your ground in defending him. A lot of times as we pry into our kids' lives, they're getting the sense that we don't trust them. Where were you? What did you do? Well, I went to school. What did you do at school? Well, I did some work. Well, what work? What? Show it to me. In other words, we communicate all the time that we don't trust them. We communicate to them that we firmly believe that they're probably always going to lie to us. See, it's easy then for a kid to start thinking, my parents don't believe in me. They don't believe the best of me. They're always thinking the worst. Now, you're doing it out of concern. But I'm just saying, from their point of view, they're getting the message that you don't trust them, that you don't believe in them. Number 4, ignoring. There's a story in the book of Samuel, the original prophet, and his sons didn't do very well, Eli and his sons, and he didn't really pay attention, and then his sons were an incredible disappointment to not only him but to God, but it was largely because they were ignored. You know, you're busy with your own thing. It's easy to do as a parent. You're busy working, you're busy trying to provide for your family, and then sometimes you end up ignoring your family. You're busy with your own things. All right, so how to build, in a positive way, how do you build communication bridges? Okay, we want to connect. Walls divide, bridges connect. So what bridges could you build in your family? Demanding respect. Leviticus 19:3, each of you must respect his mother or father. Okay, just, you know, a lot of parents will try to get along with their kids. They want their kids to like them. And so they, you know, try to get at their level. I'm a kid, you're a kid, let's play together. But you watch two kids playing, it doesn't take very long and they're fighting. You are the parent. Be the parent. And that means your kids must respect you. Don't let them talk back to you. That's not how it goes. I'm your parent doesn't mean I'm perfect. But you respect me in the role that God has given me, and you have to demand that respect. Number two, listening. Proverbs 16, verse 16. How much better to get wisdom than gold? Choose understanding rather than silver. Understanding comes from listening. Don't assume. Listen to your kids. Why did you do that? You know, when they do something that you disagree with, instead of just coming down with the punishment, at least try to figure out what they were thinking. What went on? Maybe I'm seeing things in a wrong way. Maybe I communicated to you wrongly. Let's talk about this. I need to listen to you. Number three, sharing. Matthew 19:13-14. Then little children were brought to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples rebuked those who brought them. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." Spend time with your kids. That's what Jesus did. All the adults in that day thought Jesus was wasting. Why are you spending time with these kids? And Jesus said, because they matter. These kids matter. Spend time with your kids. Number four, negotiating. Philippians 2:3. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Negotiate with your kids. A lot of times we give our kids poor instructions, they fail, and then we get angry, and then the punishment comes. Make sure things are clear. Look, if you do your homework, then this is going to happen. If you don't do your homework, then this is what's going to happen. It's clear. Teenage kids, I remember, you know, you're a teenager and your parents say, you know, you have to be home by 11. That's the curfew. And if you're not home by 11, see, a lot of times we don't say what's going to happen if you're not. So then you come home at 12 and then you get the riot act and you get into real trouble. But that was never agreed upon. So then the kid's just angry. Instead, parents need to sit down. Okay, look, you have a choice. You can come home at 11 o'clock and then we treat you really well. On Saturday, you can do whatever you want to do. But if you come home after 12, you have to work with me all day Saturday. That's your choice. So the kid comes home at 12 o'clock. And what happens? The parents are upset. They're disappointed. And so they yell at him for a half an hour. And then they say, "And you will be working with me all day Saturday." Now, the agreement was that you will work all day Saturday if you came home late. The agreement wasn't you have to work all day Saturday and you get yelled at for a half an hour. And because you went over what you said you were going to do, now the kid thinks it's unfair and he doesn't learn anything. But instead, look, I said you have a choice. And I mean it. You're free to choose what you want. So the kid comes home 12 o'clock, you meet him, you say, "Well, I see you chose to work with me on Saturday. Good, because I need the help." And that's it. I don't have to yell at you. That wasn't part of the argument. See, now I treated you with respect. I honored your choice. I gave you a choice. You choose. Fine. I'll honor that choice. Now the kid goes on Saturday. The whole day as he's working, he's thinking, you know what, maybe next time I'll come on time. Because I'm paying a big price for this. And I'm the only one to blame. Anchoring the bridge, all right? Don't build a wall, build a bridge. How do you anchor a bridge? A bridge has to be anchored or it does no good. 1 Corinthians 3:10-11. Each one should be careful how he builds. No one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. Proverbs 14:26. Reverence for God gives a man deep strength. His children have a place of refuge and security. Connect your children connect your family to God. Key attitudes to communicate to your kids. The I am somebody attitude. How do you communicate your kids that they are somebody? Not in themselves, but God has created them something. You are somebody. I can do it. Most things in life we fail at first. How do you give your kids this sense that they can do it? I can do this thing. You want them to try. Even when they fail, you want them to try again. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. That's the attitude you want your kids to have. The I will try attitude instead of the I won't try. I'm afraid of failure. Don't let your kids fear failure. Failure is part of learning and growing. God loves us as we are. Why do we feel failure? Three skills to communicate to your children. Self-discipline. You want your kids to be self-disciplined. How do you get them to be self-disciplined? You give them responsibility. I'm going to let you do this thing. And you learn responsibility by what happens. And if you fail, you suffer a little bit because of your failure. And then you learn. You learn to take care of it so that you don't suffer, so that you get the reward. But if you rescue them from everything, you give them responsibility, and when they fail, you come in and help them. You know, the little kid, you're at a restaurant and he spills his milk. And then you clean it up and you yell at him. I yell at him. He spilled his milk. Here, you know what? You can cause problems, problems happen, and you can fix problems. Here's the napkins. You know, clean this up. And they clean it up. You didn't get angry at them. Things happen. And you reward them. You honor them for taking... There's a problem. You created a problem and you did something about it. Congratulations. Judgment. Teach them right and wrong and how to make good judgments. Okay. The one relationship you most want your kids to have. Psalm 78. Oh my people, listen to my instructions. Open your ears to what I'm saying. For I will speak to you in a parable. I will teach you hidden lessons from our past, stories we have heard and known, stories our ancestors handed down to us. We will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about His power and His mighty wonders. For He issued His laws to Jacob. He gave His instructions to Israel. He commanded our ancestors to teach them to their children, so the next generation might know them. Even the children not yet born. And they will turn and teach their own children. So each generation should set its hope anew on God, not forgetting His glorious miracles and obeying His commands. Ultimately, the thing that you need to communicate to your children is the relationship to God. Everything hinges on that. There's nothing more important. Making a living, the things, the hobbies, the things that you busy yourself. The most important thing is your walk with your wife, and then if you have children, your walk with your kids. Make that the center of your communication in all that you do. If you succeed there, you succeed everywhere else.